Sounds like, yeah, you know, it sounds like very dismissive sort of, take him to the, get him out of here. Put him in the bathroom, like in a Bronx Tale, you know? That but guy also, who kept jinxing the horses, put him in the bathroom, take him to the hill, that kind of
but
thing.
But it's organic.
Yeah.
I like that it just came about on its own. I'm not a big fan of sort of the forced ones that teams do. Like, remember in the old days, it was like 20 years ago now, though, the Jaguars put a axe and a log in the locker room, was like, keep chopping wood, and then somebody like...
I don't remember.
Somebody cut their leg because they like picked it up, tried to hit it.
I do remember, the punter cut his leg or something, right?
Like, I don't love. People put anchors in there or chains. You're only as strong as your weakest. And they try to force these things.
Mm-hmm.
This is organic.
Yeah.
They have a hill. They've had a hill for a while where they run and they do their conditioning.
Right.
It sucks. But now, in theory, if they can utilize it in these situations in a game where they clearly did. They're feeling their oats right now.
Definitely.
They ran the ball when they wanted to run the ball. They had to run the ball. Everybody knew they were running the whole thing.
They were in better shape. They did what they wanted to do.
This could all fall apart. This could all fall apart. They could all look gassed. They could get blown off the field by Seattle, and everybody's like, so much for the hill. Maybe we put that slogan away, right? Like the, remember the Boogeymen Part 2 or whatever, the Redemption Tour and that thing that just blew up immediately?
Boogeymen was organic, right?
Yes, I think so.
They came up with it and started
doing
it. Yeah.
Those are the ones I like.
Only lasted a couple weeks,
but whatever.
Yeah.
And this may not have legs.
Mm-hmm.
If Ramondre Stevenson gets hurt, this kind of falls apart because now who's running the? Oh, we're gonna lean on Gibson to run the ball late in the game. Like, but for what it is, for who they are, and this ties into the whole Mayo thing. Like the softy coach, maybe kind of wasn't as soft as we wanted to imply, and maybe that's why he pushed back throughout the summer on the players coach thing. I just want to be a good coach, and I want to have a team that gets ready to play and knows what they're doing. So, no, I like it. And if they were legit, they were legitimately saying it. I've seen the mic'd up audio, right? Let's take him to the hill. They were in the freaking huddle.
I am.
That's
cool. Do we have that? Can we play the, this is the sound of them on the sideline. Do we have that, Brian? If we have that, here's what it sounded like. They were saying that all throughout the end of the game, and it was cool. I mean, it's a cool little slogan. I don't think it's, I mean, there's been some bad ones. I remember Adalius Thomas and the Humble Pie shirts. Remember that?
Yep.
Yep, it's pretty lame. No days off. I mean, Bill just basically yelled that until everybody started making T-shirts.
Yep.
And what was the other? Kraft had one, too. Remember Kraft, like, he, like, trademarked a bunch of phrases?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they were all sort of like, okay, like, I'm not.
They've been doing it for years. Early on in the tenure, Bill had ones that were made, like, Winners Wanted.
Right.
Target September, because they had started slow one year, so they all, like, Target September. Yeah, there's been this. I'd prefer it come this way. You can't nickname yourself, and you shouldn't force a slogan that isn't there.
Agreed. There's some news and notes here with the Patriots today, including this report from Andrew Callahan, the Boston Herald, great reporter, says that the Patriots secretly added to Bill Belichick's defense this offseason, stealing a page from the new Seahawks head coach and defensive whiz, Mike McDonald. According to one veteran, Jonathan Jones, our good friend Jonathan Jones, we'll have to ask him about this on Monday, installing the new package is something Belichick never would have done. And here's the lead. It says, Jonathan Jones used to have this running joke. The last few years, he'd return to the Patriots facility in the spring. He'd work out and practice and sit in meetings. And as the coaching staff began to reinstall Belichick's defense all over again, he would invariably crack, are we running something new? Then Jones's position coach would smile and say, no, that is until this spring. Yeah, actually, Patriots cornerbacks coach Mike Pellegrino told him, we are. It's just some of the things the Ravens do with pressure, he said. And I'd say, how do I say this right? I'll save it for the end of the year. But Jones was adamant the Patriots never would run these concepts under Belichick. Definitely something that I don't think he would have implemented. Definitely new, according to Jones. Reaction to that?
Well, I love it. And isn't this what the whole basic theory was on promoting Jerod Mayo and keeping DeMarcus Covington? Because I think there were certain portions of the world that were like, if you're firing Belichick, why would you keep the people that he trained, the people that run his defense, the people that really only know in the NFL working under him and his system? And the theory was, no, they're men. They're actual adults. They've been around football a long time. They have ideas that they'd probably would love to try that they wouldn't be allowed to try under Bill Belichick because Bill Belichick runs the show a certain way.
Right.
Right? Like, this was the optimistic view of why you would keep portions of Bill Belichick's staff and expect it to improve or expect it to change and not just be like, oh yeah, it's going to be the same. No, because I'm sure there's things Bill Belichick did when he got out from under Bill Parcells that he wanted to do that Bill Belichick probably thought there's no way Parcells would have let me do that. But now that I'm on my own, I don't need anyone's permission.
Mm-hmm.
And now Jerod Mayo and DeMarcus Covington don't have to say, hey, Bill, do you think it'd be okay if we ran X? Nope. We can just run X. And it may work. It may not work. That's their prerogative to test it out. But
and on offense, with offensive stuff, he let his guys do what they wanted to do. There wasn't a Belichick offense, right? Like, he'd let Patricia do the zone blocking stuff and the, you know, implement all, which they couldn't implement and had a terrible time with, but all that Shanahan offense crap and the, you know, McVay and the zone blocking and the zone runs and stuff, that was all stuff that Belichick was fine with them tinkering around with,
sure,
and experimenting with, but his defense was his defense.
Well, and he, because he had so much success with it.
Right.
Right, forever. And I remember having this conversation with Scott Pioli working on a feature on the defense in the early 2000s when people were wondering, is Bill's defense too big? He's got these big outside linebackers that aren't athletic enough for the modern game of football. And Scott said, yeah, Bill's been told many times dating back to the 80s that his defense was dated. It was old. It didn't work anymore. And every time it bounces back and it gets the job done in the 80s, in the 90s, in the 2000s. So I can understand why he would be set in his ways.
Right.
Right? Like, it works long enough, and I've had people telling me it doesn't work for long enough, and I prove them wrong. Why am I going to listen to them and change it? But I also think at some point, maybe it is dated, and
yeah,
maybe it does need a refresher. And that's where people gave Brian Flores credit for that, the
yep,
1 year he took over, that he put a little different spin on it, a little bit more aggressive. And I think DeMarcus
kicked
Covington,
his ass out the door.
Well, yeah. And then DeMarcus Covington,
right,
you know, is clearly doing that with Mayo, whatever that power structure they have there is. And that's a good thing. Why wouldn't you steal from Baltimore?
Yeah.
They have almost always had good defenses.
Certainly.
Right?
And they were the best defense in the league last year in terms of, I think, points. By the way, Texter has a good one. Bad slogan. Broncos country, let's ride. Russell Wilson, yeah, that one was brutal.
I still believe that was a marketing slogan gone wrong.
You think so?
Because there is an ad for...
He had no energy when he did it either. He'd just be like, Broncos country.
Oh,
right.
It was terrible.
Like, it was so
terrible.
Bad, yeah.
But I think eBay Motors runs ads that's got like
that
the
say
same...
Bronco country, let's
no,
ride.
No, let's ride.
Really?
And I always thought he signed a deal and it was going to be like where you didn't know you were getting advertised to and then you kind of find out later you're being advertised
to.
Right.
Yeah.
Type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was so bad that they were like, yeah, we're good. We're not going to enact this deal here.
Yeah.
So
you do your little Subway deal.
Because it was terrible. It made no sense.
Say weird,
yeah,
sort of gross things to the sandwich before,
yeah,
you eat it. Like that was, yeah, that would, nothing about it. It's very hard to market him at a certain point.
Yeah.
And it seemed like early on there was, you know, he's this young guy.
Oh,
he's
I loved
dating
him.
This singer, you know, like, but then as you got to know him more, as his personality came out, everyone was like, I don't really think.
Or
wanna...
as he evolved. I think there's some of that to him.
Could be.
When he started having a wife who was in entertainment, I think those wives that are in entertainment change quarterbacks. I think we saw it a little bit here with one. They come from a different world and they convince that guy, you're the star.
Yeah.
You should be treated like, have you seen me at my shows, honey? I'm the star. Everybody bows down to me.
Right.
You're the same thing. You're not
you're
one of 11.
You're taking less money to play
right
on this team,
right,
with
are you
all
doing?
These people who are less famous than you?
No,
yeah, absolutely.
Tell them you won't play unless you have green M&Ms in your locker by game time, right? Like, that's
sure
the world they live in.
It is.
And I think those wives change these men.
Yeah, I think so too. 3:30, we'll be talking with Tom E. Curran. The sharp money still on Seattle. I looked it up this morning.
Ooh.
70% of that money still on Seattle, -3.5. You find that disrespectful. I kind of do, too. But I also think if I'm being consistent about what I thought this team would be this year, then that shouldn't surprise me too much. We were talking a lot about what going 2-0 would mean, what it would mean for Jerod Mayo, what it would mean for Robert Kraft, what it would mean for Jacoby Brissett and basically the entire team and franchise and all of that. What is going 1-1? What is losing to Seattle? Let's even call it an ugly loss. What does that mean? How much do you overreact to, like, a 3-score loss?
Oh.
Like what the Niners did to the Jets last week.
So, like, 28-6.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh.
That's a 4-score loss, right? Well, no, not technically.
No,
you're right.
Yeah,
loss. So if it's 8, yeah, it's 3 scores. All right, so fine.
Checking my math.
I was thinking
Jesus
by 7s, that's all. But, yeah, you're right. It's that. So, yeah, something like that. 32-19, something along those lines.
Unfortunate. I think it would be people would really start to question the team quickly.
Would people write them off? Would they
no
say that first week was a fluke and this is what they really are?
I don't think so totally, because you can't take away that win and you can't take away that performance. And that's why you accurately put so much emphasis on it when you asked Brissett, how big was that win for the organization as a whole? Like, it mattered for everybody in that building that is in a new regime and in a new position. That win mattered.
Does that mean they're due for a letdown then?
That's my question.
Is it hard to keep that going?
If you're not that good.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they're that good. We haven't changed our view of the talent, right?
Right. No, I haven't, yeah.
So
maybe the defense is better than I thought, but yeah.
Right. And they may be better than you thought, but they're still, talent-wise, they don't measure up with a lot of the teams they're going to face.
Agreed.
They have a significant
I don't think
deficit.
They match up with the Seahawks.
Agreed.
I think the Seahawks are a far more talented team.
Far?
Offensively, yes.
Yeah, they probably are far
offensively,
more talented.
I think
you're
they're
right.
Far more talented.
Far is probably accurate there. So that's still the reality, and it will be a little bit of a reality check, a little bit of a slap in the face, a step backwards. But I don't think it'll be the sky is falling, and that's the value of that first win. Whereas if you got blown out by the Bengals,
right,
and then you lose big at home to Seattle, I think the Andy Hart 0-17 bandwagon would have been overflowing. Everybody would have been jumping on. You were right, Hart, blah, 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 blah. Now, I was wrong. It went the other way. They won the first game.
A man can dream, can't he, right?
I'm not dreaming. I'm
you can tell
saying.
He's a little salty. That it
right. I'm not
happen.
Salty.
He's like, you would have all been kissing my ass.
I'm just.
You're so lucky.
I feel like I am there, like, when you walk in and your kids go, why are you cranky? I'm not cranky. What do you mean I'm cranky? I'm not cranky.
Stop yelling.
I'm not yelling.
Salty.
I'm just saying that I think a lot of people deep down in places they don't want to admit still question this team's talent, and they will take a step back. But you can't take away that week one performance.
Nope.
You can't take away that win, and you can't take away the benefit of the doubt that built, as you said, defensively. I think defensively they got a boost that can't be taken away right away. Now, if Geno Smith carves you up and because, I mean, there's a guy that, does he run for a 34-yard touchdown again like he did last week?
Yeah. Well,
you're letting him run around free?
They had a bunch of safeties. Like, that was a whole thing.
It was
thing.
A very
weird
game.
The offense didn't even do that much. Like, he barely passed for 150 yards,
He
think,
did
right?
what yeah. you did. He handed it to his running back and said, go ahead. Now, the difference is he had one long run for a touchdown, but similar to Brissett, he ran the ball. So your quarterbacks ran a little bit. Your running games with your running back led the way. You did just enough offensively, and you leaned on your defense to... I think their defense wasn't as good. I believe the Broncos had 4 or 5 red zone trips that came up short. They went like 1 or 4, 1 or 5 in the red zone. Your defense scored a couple points, 4 of them, actually, 2 different safeties, which
right.
I wonder how many games in NFL history have multiple safeties.
I can't imagine that many.
No.
I don't remember there being many safeties at all last year. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We got Thursday Night Football tonight, AFC East matchup between the Bills and the Dolphins in Miami. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk to Tommy Curran right after Brian tells you what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
The Boston Red Sox, they won their series over the Baltimore Orioles last night with a win in extra innings. Tyler O'Neill walked it off for the Sox with a 3-run home run to give the Sox a 5-3 victory. Despite the win, however, the Red Sox still remain 4 games out of the third and final AL wildcard spot. Tonight, the Red Sox will head to New York to take on the Yankees in a 4-game series, and we will have the call for the game for you right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. First pitch tonight is at 7:15 with Cooper Criswell on the bump for the Sox and Nestor Cortez on the hill for the Yankees. Our coverage starts at 6:15 with the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show with Joe Weil. Patriots are back to practice today with their Week 2 matchup against the Seattle Seahawks. Patriots lineman Sidy Sow, who missed Sunday's win over the Bengals, he did not participate today. NFL Week 2 kicks off with a battle in the AFC East as Josh Allen, the Buffalo Bills, head to Miami to take on Tyreek Hill and the Dolphins. You can listen to that game on WEEI AM 850. Westwood One's coverage of that game will begin at 7:30. I'm Brian Frisoco. That's what's trending on WEEI and on WEEI.com.
It's Tua in that offense.
Cheetah.
A Buffalo Bills team. Yes, Cheetah.
Don't forget Cheetah, the handcuffed Cheetah.
Hopefully he gets a ride to the stadium this time around, maybe, or just drives a little slower, or I don't know. Maybe the cops don't freak out when they see him this time. Either way, that's what's coming on tonight, a game that is on Amazon Prime. I hate to remind everybody of this, but the Thursday night games are all on Prime, so that's where you're going to have to watch it. But you'll be watching this one. It's an AFC East matchup. One of these two teams is not going to be behind the Patriots in the standings after tonight, which is interesting. And which one do you think is going to be, Andy Hart?
We're watching the standings.
I'm watching the
week
standings.
One.
How long do you think they're going to be in the outside of third or fourth place? I'm very much watching these standings.
I'm very interested in this game because of, A, I think there's an intrigue to both teams. Josh Allen, to me, is one of the most watchable players in the NFL because of the way he plays. And I think we're all wondering, what can he do with young receivers, different receivers? Can he do the Brady thing? Can he just say, I'm so good that I'm going to make these guys good enough around me, win the division again? Because he's won it 4 straight years? At least 3 straight years. Maybe 4 straight years.
I think 4, yeah.
It's been 4 ever since 2019.
Right. So can he go 5 straight years when people said, oh, they got rid of Diggs, blah, blah, blah. And then on the Miami side, early in the season, that offense is ridiculous. The big plays, we know it. Their coach may be a dink and a freaking caricature of himself, but I think he's a pretty good coach.
He knows offense, that's for sure. I mean, he's drawing that thing up, and he does have a lot of talent on the offense, obviously.
Absolutely.
No Mostert, he's out. But you do have Ashan, I think.
He is questionable, I believe.
Okay, so either way, I mean, you know,
they're like the 49ers.
Bunch of games, those guys were out. Yeah.
Doesn't matter who they put in. Generally, that guy can run the ball a little bit.
Yep.
Because of the scheme, and it helps when you have defenses that are scared as hell of two of the fastest guys in the NFL, and yeah. Waddle and Hill being out there.
That's a Miami team that did not get off to a good start. It seemed like they were going to get smacked around by the Jaguars. They came back at the end and won the game. Same thing with the Bills. The Bills were shaky in week one. It looked like they were going to lose to Arizona, who was a lottery team this year. At least Jacksonville was good. Arizona was not, and they're a team that's working on trying to put the whole thing back together, and they needed a lot of things to go right. Buffalo did. On top of the comeback that they orchestrated with Josh Allen and his new receivers. But, yeah, I was thinking that same thing. Buffalo lost a bunch of guys on defense. They were really up against the cap. They had to let all these people go, including Steph Diggs, who they traded away, who was, I guess, a nightmare to deal with. And I wonder, like, is that going to take a toll? Or do the Bills, with their core of players, starting with Josh Allen, their MVP-caliber quarterback, who's never actually won an MVP, is this enough to go forward and to keep winning and to keep taking the division? I'm not sure about that. I think Miami takes it this year.
And every one of these... If the division is what we expect it to be, three teams and then the Patriots or the also-Rans, every one of these could be a tiebreaker game. I'm mocking you for looking at the standings in week 1.5 here on a Thursday night, but this could be a tiebreaker game where either the Bills or the Dolphins win or lose the division because of this game, mm-hmm. right? That you end up kicking yourself in week 17 or 18 because you kicked one away here. I like the Bills here. My guy Brian just told me that Josh Allen has never lost on a Thursday night. And
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Just so happens it's Thursday night.
Sure
it
is.
Also just so happens that I like Josh Allen and I root for him. I know Keon Coleman didn't do much week one, correct? The new rookie receiver the Patriots actually wanted.
Yes.
But
I'll tell you exactly what he did. But yeah, he didn't do a whole lot.
You know, they're trying to find somebody, whether it's him, Coleman, Kincaid, the tight end.
Coleman had 4 catches, 51 yards. He had the most yards out of any of their receivers. Shakir, 3 for 42.
I think he can be a star.
Mac Hollins, 225. Knox, 123. Kincaid, 111.
Jesus.
Curtis Samuel, 2 for 15. Yeah, it wasn't.
Wasn't Kincaid a first-round pick last year?
I believe so, yeah.
How about you start doing something,
a little while. Knox was a first-round pick, wasn't he?
No, I don't think Knox was. But
Knox
I'm pretty
was a,
sure.
Sorry, Knox was a third-round pick.
Yeah, Kincaid, I'm pretty sure, was a first-round pick last year. Now you got Keon Coleman. There's no excuse. Put your big boy pants on and help Josh Allen win. I'm a little bit of a Josh Allen fan, you'll come to find.
Yeah, like seems Josh like Allen. It.
He's
I like
one of
Josh
the more
Allen
fun
too.
Players.
He is a fun player. He reminds me a lot of like young Cam Newton. Like he's got that same kind of skill set. And I sort of thought like he didn't have a great start to his career, but he has come into his own. And he's one of those guys that I thought needed extra help around him if he really wanted to flourish, if he really wanted to hit his full potential. And I thought Steph Diggs provided that. Now that he's gone and you're dealing with Keon Coleman and Shakir, it's a different story. I mean, we'll see. It was enough to beat the Arizona Cardinals. Let's see if it's enough to keep up with the Miami offense and what they're, I'm sure, looking to do at home here against this Buffalo Bills team. Now, the Bills' defense didn't look great against Arizona, but they do have a pretty good secondary, even with the guys that they lost. And I think that all in all up front, they're still pretty strong. They did lose some key players, but I don't think they're in any sort of desperate situation there.
No, I don't think so, but Miami can make you look bad.
Yeah.
Like, Miami has the potential at any, you know, it's one play, 80 yards. I know that was the longest of his career, but
right.
Tyreek Hill can do that at any time. Jaylen Waddle can do that at any time, and that's the danger of facing that Miami. Now, what did they put up, 20 points in week one? So they're not exactly coming off, it's not like they put up 70 in Denver or whatever last year. So, but they can make you look bad in a hurry. I think this is a fun game, and the short week in week two, there's a lot going on here. Now, the better coach is McDaniel, correct? Sean McDermott, I think we all have questions about how good he is.
Yeah, I think we have some questions about McDaniel, too, don't we? I mean,
we do, but if you had to pick one to scheme something up, who would you pick?
To scheme up an offense, I'd definitely take McDaniel.
Well, yeah, because McDermott's a defensive coach.
Yeah, but I'd probably stick with him.
I think McDaniel's a better schemer if I had to put my faith in it. Josh Allen, undefeated on Thursday nights. Keep rolling, Josh. Keep
6-0.
Rolling.
All right.
Make it 7.
Joining us right now on the hotline, your friend and mine from NBC Sports Boston, Tom E. Kern with WEEI Afternoons, is brought to you by FlexCar. Save thousands with your flexible car lease at FlexCar.com and by Drains by James, Eastern Massachusetts' top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair. Mr. Kern, if I could pot you up here. There we go. Mr. Kern, how are you doing today?
Tremendous, Christian. How are you? Hello, Andrew.
Hi, how are you?
Doing very well. Looking forward to this game tonight. Looking forward to this weekend, of course. But I wanted to open with the big story from yesterday from ESPN about Robert Kraft in the Hall of Fame, which was, I thought, very interestingly timed. You know, we got 1 week into the season. There's all these storylines going around the NFL, and ESPN comes out with their, not really bread and butter, but there was a time where it seemed like they were churning these articles out every other week. A long-form story here about Robert Kraft and his attempts to get in to the Hall of Fame. I heard you speak about this a little bit yesterday, but why don't we follow up on it here? What do you think is the main thing keeping Kraft out of the Hall of Fame?
I think basically it tracks down to there's an anti-patriot sentiment among the voters, and I think it's probably dates back to, you know, 2000 and stretched along the entire course of their dynasty, having mainly to do with the fact that, you know, when they got good, there was a tendency, I think, for the Patriots themselves and the organization to act as if they invented the wheel. And I think that was off-putting, and the continued success of the organization we saw play out between the league and the team in 2007 with Spygate. And I think that rubbed a lot of voters the wrong way, and they continue to cling to it. And it kind of tracked on from there.
So do you think
the bigger story to me
that
is
was a long pause. Jesus.
Well, the bigger story is that there was a story.
Right.
I mean, the gist of the story seemed to be that Robert Kraft deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. He's not in the Hall of Fame. The people who work for him keep trying to help him get into the Hall of Fame, and the voters find that unseemly. So now they're definitely not going to let him get in the Hall of Fame. He's going to do so on their agenda and on their timeline. So to me, this was more, it raised more questions to me about the voters and the amount of time invested in talking about the Dynasty book and the Dynasty docuseries as if those weren't going to be done regardless. Robert Kraft got into the Hall of Fame in 2018. Those things were coming out. Those were not efforts to get Robert Kraft into the Hall of Fame. They were efforts, I think, by Robert and by the Krafts, but especially Robert, to say, yeah, I'd love to have the story told the way I view it from the lens of me. And I think that it was done that way, but it had nothing to do with trying to get him into the Hall of Fame.
You done now? Just checking.
Yeah, I'm done. I don't know what direction you guys are going to go with some of the questions. So it takes a second to process exactly what the question is from Christian, so it takes me a second to land the plane.
I got you. No worries. So just to follow up on that, do you think this article, first of all, I found the article weird because I don't know, do a lot of people care about this outside of New England? Are they breaking down whether, oh my God, Robert Kraft's not in the Hall of Fame? Why is he not in? He's getting screwed. I found the article
he really
weird.
Wants to be
yeah,
in the
he
Hall
wants
of Fame.
To be. Who cares? Yeah. Whatever. But Tom, do you think this helps or hurts his potential to get in the Hall of Fame sooner rather than later?
Well, given the fact that there's however many voters, 50,
yeah.
Or is that just for all? Given the fact that there's 50 voters, and the way those voters tend to react to things is, well, screw that. You know what? Now they're trying to put pressure on us. Now he's definitely not getting in. Or it can have an opposite effect. I really don't have an opinion as to what this story will do. And I really don't.
Which I appreciate.
I am mystified that the story was written in the way that it was, and that the overarching conclusion that Don Van Natta seemed to be driving home was, hey, Kraft really wants to get in the Hall of Fame. Look how hard he's trying. I mean, he definitely deserves to be in, but he looks like a clown trying this hard.
Yeah, and 5,500 words to get to there.
Yeah. not a short read. Tommy, the Patriots taking on the Seahawks at home this weekend. We saw Malcolm Butler's going to be the guy ringing the bell, and that's a nice little troll job there. The Seahawks won their game similar to how the Patriots did. So how do you see this this matchup going? Who prevails on Sunday?
They are definitely a little bit of mirror images, I think, because you have a journeyman quarterback for both teams. Both teams with a rookie head coach. A good running back for both teams. Defenses that are pretty capable. And, you know, if you look closely at what Seattle did offensively last week, wasn't that impressive aside from Kenny Walker's performance, a 34-yard scramble for a touchdown for Geno Smith. But they had they were 4-for-12 on third down. And of those third downs, they were in third and five or worse on 9 of them. So they're not really a potent offense. It's a good spot for the Patriots to be home, to play against a team that, again, does not have a great rushing defense, or at least did not last year, the Seattle Seahawks. So it's a good spot for them. But, again, it's a four-win team last year that still has a pockmarked and question-laden offensive line, regardless of last week's outcome. So it wouldn't be a stunner if the Patriots don't come out with more points on Sunday than Seattle.
Tom, don't yell at me if you hate the question, but I have a question for you based on three guys in new roles that I think did really well on opening day. And I would say Jerod Mayo, Alex Van Pelt, and Jacoby Brissett all did a really nice job in their debuts and their current roles for the Patriots. Which of those is most sustainable? Which of those do you think was like, yeah, that's who he's going to be in that role for this team?
I think all of them have equal opportunities to be the same guy. I think, you know, with Van Pelt, he is going to at some point not get a throw knocked loose in the end zone by Hunter Henry that was made by Jacoby Brissett. So he might fall behind. He might not get a strip on the goal line from his defense. He might be down in a game.
Mm-hmm.
He'll still be a very good play caller. He'll still be very organized, I think, with what he wants to do. But he's going to see more adversity, as will Jacoby Brissett, because eventually some team is going to load up and say, okay, beat us with your arm. And I think Brissett could, as anyone quarterback could, if they have the artillery offensively. So, I mean, it's all circumstance-based. Who do you think is going to have the most sustained one?
Honestly, I think Jerod Mayo. He's made a great turnaround in my mind. I think he had some little brush fires and ups and downs. I've been thoroughly impressed with him for about the last 10 days with his messaging, something you and I have talked about before. And then something Jacoby Brissett said when he talked to us earlier in the week when he was raving on the plane about, Jerod told us on Tuesday if we did X, Y, and Z, we would win the game. And they went out and did X, Y, and Z, and they won the game. When you start to build that cachet of credibility within your locker room, I think you're well on your way to doing a really nice job as a head coach.
I think he really needed the football to start, because speaking extemporaneously for 4 months straight about things that were not tangible, quarterback competitions, mm-hmm. Competition on the offensive line, how things would look, what things were going to happen, it was becoming difficult for him. And I think that he stepped on plenty of landmines verbally in the offseason, as any first-year head coach might, and especially one who is saying, you know what, I'm going to be me. He stepped on plenty of landmines, but now that the football has started, I agree with you, Andy. We all needed things to focus on rather than these intangible things that are just opinion-based.
Yep.
One thing Jerod Mayo said and has said a few times since the game was that we're going to run the ball. Everybody knows it. That's what we're going to do. In the event that Seattle takes that into account and is able to, I don't know, stop the run, what are these backup plans that Mayo was talking about? What do you think those are going to look like, Tommy?
I think there's a lot still left on the table for what the Patriots can do offensively that they didn't even tap into. Demario Douglas has 2 targets last week. Jalen Polk has 1 catch. You didn't see really any jet sweeps, any motion, anything that was very intricate. So I think that if you're going to do that and force the Patriots to throw, yes, they can try to go over the top and, you know, rattle their saber with Tyquan Thornton. That's probably not going to scare anybody. Tyquan Thornton's not going off for 6 and 160. And he's your ex receiver, really. KJ Osborne's not having that kind of day either. But I do think that they are capable of having that kind of a day from a guy like Demario Douglas, because he is a unique guy to try and deal with. We watched an Andy during camp every single day. When he was on the field, when he was targeted, it changes things. I don't think that they had to go to Demario Douglas last week, so they really didn't. They just said, let's just keep doing what we're doing. But those are the things that I would imagine would be different, and he has to be a bigger part of the offense. And I don't think it's a letdown that he wasn't. It's just his number didn't come up, but it needs to.
I don't know how big you are into spreads and numbers and gambling, but I have found.
I like them.
Okay, so I like a good buffet spread, but this is a different kind of spread we're going to talk about.
I like them both.
The Seahawks -3.5. I find, and you know I'm not a big, like, homer. That's my podcast partner, Fitzy. I find that a little disrespectful for the way these two teams played on opening day and one team playing at home and another team flying across the country. Are the Patriots being a little disrespected with that number?
Always remember, don't ever forget, the reason spreads are made are just to entice people to put equal amounts of money on both sides mm-hmm. so that the bookmakers or Vegas, whoever it is, can make their money on the vigorish. Mm-hmm. So there's no respect or disrespect in my mind usually involved. It's just trying to take advantage of public perception so that they can get the money balanced. I would not look at the Patriots as I would probably call this game a pick, or the Patriots a 1-point favorite based upon week one, based upon all the things you said. It's going to be 10 a.m. for Seattle when this game kicks off. That means they're getting to the stadium at 7 a.m. That means their alarm clocks are going off at 5 a.m. Pacific time. Mm. That's hard. And it's not a potent team. The Patriots do have an outstanding defense that came out of week one basically intact, injury-wise. They can run on a team like that. So all those things enter into that in terms of why I would say the spread is off. But they're trying to make the number enticing to people. And looking, well, Patriots won four games last year, and it was only 100 hours ago that we thought that they were the worst team in football. So let's not go crazy with trying to make them a favorite here.
All right, we'll leave it right there. Tommy Curran, thanks so much for the time. We'll talk to you again next Thursday.
Very good. See you guys.
All right, see you later. It's Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston, joining us here on WEEI Afternoon. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Quick break. When we come back, Jason Tatum was on Jimmy Fallon, the Jimmy Fallon show. He wasn't on Jimmy Fallon.
That'd be weird.
But he was on the show, and we got a couple of little basketball tidbits from it. Not a whole lot, but we'll get to that next.
Cats head coach Jerod Mayo on The Greg Hill Show.
Jacoby did a good job controlling the game, not making mistakes. We won the turnover battle. We won the hit and yards battle, and that's what I'm talking about.
Miss Jerod Mayo on The Greg Hill Show?
Do it on demand, anywhere, anytime. Download the Odyssey app and take Boston sports with you everywhere you go.
WEEI.
WEEI. New England Sports Original.
Say it!
That was Jason Tatum.
Is that what he wanted him to say?
I don't know what he wanted him to say. He wanted him to say something.
Just say something.
He wouldn't
this
pick
weird.
A West Coast team. Yeah,
it was like Tom Curran. Long pause. Say something.
It was a Curran-esque long pause. It certainly was. But yeah, that was the tail end. It was really a very fluffy Jimmy Fallon sit down there with Jason Tatum. He talked a lot about his new book about the toddler who dunks or whatever. It's
loosely based on Deuce.
You can guess who it's about. It seems like a nice little kid's book. I'm sure I'm going to be getting copies of it sent to me by my aunts and uncles and things like that at some point around the holidays. But that to the side for a minute, he did talk a little basketball, and he was asked about the Knicks, and he said the Knicks might win a few more games this year than they did last year. He asked who was going to be the MVP, who was going to be the MVP of the league. He said, can I say myself? I think Jason Tatum could be the MVP this year. It's a very political award. It could be his turn, right? Sure. He just won the championship. That gives you a little cachet. Certainly. I mean, I don't know if he's going to have the numbers to back it up, but I think sometimes it happened with Embiid a couple years ago. It was his turn, so he ended up getting the MVP. I think Tatum could certainly be in the mix for that, and he had asked him who was going to be in the NBA Finals this year. He said the Celtics, and then after a long Tom E. Curran-esque pause, said a rematch of the Dallas Mavericks. And that got me thinking about the Celtics' path to the finals and their opponent in the finals last year and how charmed it really was. Like, I mean, it really was a charmed path. And not to take anything away from it,
you win the
championship, you're the champs, and you had a great summer, and all that's fine. Although the summer did get a little overshadowed by this sale of the team thing, which I also want to get to. But it was a very, very, I mean, you had no Giannis, you had no Jimmy Butler even, you had no half the guys on the Knicks all
Donovan
ended up
Mitchell.
Getting hurt. Donovan Mitchell was out.
Halliburton was out.
Yeah, it was every single
team. Why are we doing this? We're diminishing a victory. What are we doing?
Well, no, I'm just saying, if they get to the Dallas Mavericks in the finals again, I would consider that pretty fortunate, wouldn't you?
Sure.
If they get to avoid the Wolves, or they get to avoid the Nuggets, even the Phoenix Suns, you know, as a team I'm a little bit more scared of than the Dallas Mavericks. I just think that would be, if they get another, and maybe this is just what the NBA and the rest of the league is going to be for them, because they were a team that stayed healthy, and that's not a small thing. You know, you had all these other superstars going down with injuries. The only Celtic injury was Porzingis, and they barely even missed him.
Yeah. The one thing I would say about Dallas is if they get to the finals 2 years in a row, doesn't that mean they're pretty good?
Yeah.
I mean, on paper, like, whatever you think of them.
They got a little lucky, too. I mean, it's just,
no, they did.
Yeah.
They absolutely did. But are they going to get lucky again, or do you just say, well, maybe they're the best team in the West. Yeah, the Celtics absolutely. First of all, the Tatum thing you said. There was a period of time last year where it was like, could he win the MVP? Mm-hmm. And then everybody's like, I mean, he's the best player on the best team.
Right.
And that whole thing. So that gets you in the conversation right there. Best player on the best team.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jason Kidd would be like, you sure about that? You sure he's the best player on that team?
I think you would be like that, too.
I would.
Yeah.
We can have that conversation long and often at any point you want.
I think we will.
We will, indeed, here on the afternoon show.
With host one and host two. Host two thinks this thing about Jaylen Brown, but host one disagrees.
Okay, so 860 calls us idiots, basically. He wanted him to say L.A., duh. So I guess maybe that was the implication there. I didn't, you know. It is L.A.
Is that where Fallon...
No, it's in New York.
Yeah, it's a New York thing. He's a Knicks guy. He's at all the Knicks games. He doesn't want him to say L.A.
Well, then screw you, 860.
Yeah, shut up, 860.
And by the way, 603, while I'm on the text machine, Hart, how about you pay attention? They were triple-teaming Kincaid all day.
Yeah, Hart, pay attention.
Guess what? I didn't watch that game. I was busy watching the Patriots and then doing a post-game show, and there is no way in hell they were triple-teaming Dalton Kincaid all day. I have seen very, very few triple teams in my life watching NFL football. That's not how it works. Hello.
Okay, it would make sense that they were able to come back from such a big deficit if there was three defenders on
one
Dalton
guy.
Kincaid.
No wonder Allen was running.
No wonder.
Why are y'all running with that guy? I'll just run here.
Literally everybody else in the team's wide open. This
Jesus.
Is amazing. They're really focused on this Kincaid guy. That's
Jack Wagon.
I didn't really watch
Thanks
the game either, so I don't know if it's true or not. He might be right. Anyway, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. The Celtics, I think, are going to be favorites all year long to repeat. I think they're going to be favorites. They're not going to get knocked off unless they have a slew of injuries like you read about, and I don't see that happening. This team's very well conditioned. They're in good shape. They're all still pretty young. There's no reason to think that this team can't go back out there and do what they just did, except for the fact that they kept everybody. You know, I still, as much as I like to see everyone get paid and, you know, a good team get brought back and not have to make big decisions like that, part of me, like, you're going down the whole bench, and you're bringing back Luke Kornet, and you're bringing back Peyton Pryor. I mean, the whole everybody. Sam Hauser's back with a new deal. It got a little ridiculous, I feel like, at points this offseason.
Yes. The one question is Porzingis, right?
Right.
The biggest question. I thought I saw, was that on the back page of the Herald today, or was that just something I saw digitally? I don't know. But that's obviously a question that's going to trickle into the regular season. Mm-hmm. But I almost don't care, right? Like, they're going to be in the playoffs. They're going to be one of the top seeds. Get him healthy and get him ready to go next spring so that he gets some time to knock some rust. I really don't care how long it takes for him to get back on the court. I think the biggest issues this team faces are the ones we've always talked about that we thought we put to bed, but then seemingly this whole Olympic thing put back on the forefront. And that is the dynamic between Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and the star power on this team and who the Alpha is, who Batman is, who Robin is. You know, I had some crazy conspiracy theories about why Jaylen Brown may or may not have been left off the Olympic team and that it may or may not have involved Jason Tatum. Then Jason Tatum goes out and basically Steve Kerr craps all over him as a star. And now is Jason Tatum going to be looking to prove something? Is that the best thing for him? Also, there's this little weird thing. The guy can't shoot anymore. He's the best player on the best team. He suddenly can't shoot a basketball.
Yeah.
And that's a legit issue. That has kind of been whistled past the graveyard-esque type thing.
Kind of, yeah. I mean,
he can't shoot anymore.
It's not a huge sample size, but it did bleed into the Olympics, and it is sort of something you look at and go, wait a minute, what's going on here?
I don't know that we've ever talked about the yips in relation to basketball.
Mm. It's hard to call it the yips when you win the championship, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
But is it a possibility that suddenly, like, shooting is in his head? Shooting is a problem? Shooting, because by all accounts, he couldn't shoot in any of the Olympic stuff he did. Practices, scrimmages, the whole damn thing. He couldn't shoot over there. So it was a continuation of his shooting issues. And
French rims.
Maybe. if Jason Tatum can't shoot, that's a problem. Because you know he's going to shoot a lot, right?
Definitely.
And then that's going to become an issue with other players on the team. Like, hey, maybe mix in a pass every once in a while so we can shoot because you lost it. If he's Rick Ankiel and he can't play anymore at the position he's supposed to play, that's a problem.
Yeah, it's definitely a problem. And something that they'll have to deal with. That could be another thing that maybe knocks him off course a little bit. Even if Tatum does take a bit of a dip in his shooting, this is the type of team that I think could handle that. You know, like he's their best player, I think. But I also think when you have a two-headed monster of wings like that and two very good guards who can both shoot threes and a big who can shoot threes and guys who come off the bench and can do do different things, you're not talking about when, like, Jokic is out for the Nuggets. You know, you're not talking about when Giannis is out for the Bucks. I think that's something that maybe they don't win the championship, but they still are a very dangerous team, even if Tatum's a percentage of what he was.
Tatum shot 28.3% from three the entire playoffs, and they still only lost three games.
That's not very good.
Well, but they still only lost three games.
You know why? That's what I mean. That's because they were able to withstand it.
I can tell you why. His name is Jaylen Brown.
Yeah. Jaylen Brown didn't shoot great in the finals.
There's a reason he was the Eastern Conference Finals MVP and the NBA Finals MVP, because he was the MVP. He was the best player in the team at that point.
Because he was a little bit better than Jason Tatum.
And my concern with Jason Tatum isn't the physical or even like point drop off if he continues to struggle shooting. It's how does that work within the dynamic of the team? Is he still considered the guy that takes the last shot? Because his other sneaky thing is he can get to the rim anytime he wants.
Right.
He doesn't always finish consistently.
Jaylen Brown ended up being the guy getting the ball at the end of the games in the playoffs.
Are we going to do that again? And how will Tatum take that?
I say do that as long as it works.
And that's why I just said I think the biggest question with this team is the one we thought we put to bed the second they won the title. That Brown-Tatum relationship, right? Like he was saying, what they going to say now?
Right.
What they're going to say is, I still have questions because of the Olympics and because of your shooting. That's what they're going to say now.
617-779-7937 is your phone number. When we come back, we'll continue with our Celtics conversation here. However, I feel like, and you may disagree, Andy, but I feel like the big portion of the Celtics offseason and all of the championship stuff ever since the announcement about Wick Grosbeck and really his father selling the team, I feel like that's really overshadowed a lot of the celebration here as they were still picking up confetti off the streets when that got announced. So we'll get into all of that. We'll get into the status of where all this is. We had the big Courtney Cox bomb a couple days ago and have not had any follow-up on it from anyone. So I'm interested in your thoughts on that as well. And your calls at 617-779-7937. Quick break. We're right back.
The Red Sox Station.
WEEI. New England Sports Original.